pantheon of bro movies, we often get flawed characters. Bros tend to be flawed. No matter how great they think they are flawed individuals. This doesn't usually come across with a lot of subtlety. Generally, it's just like, yo, we want to sleep with this person, but you know, it's tough when you can't sleep with somebody. Or it's, you know, how does one be a dad? Murderp. But in today's film, directed by Malcolm Lee, we get a group of gentlemen who all have good qualities, bad qualities, and a lot of qualities in between, where the central group of this movie is as diverse as a D&D campaign. Everybody's got their own particular set of skills and personality quirks that they bring to the group. On the other side of that, we have a group of women who all are wanting something in particular from all of these men. And each one of them have their own particular personalities, and this whole group together has a history. And while I don't think this is one of our greatest films, or greatest rom-coms, I would say, it is one that just dedicates itself almost wholeheartedly to being a mess. And in that mess, there is found the beauty of conflict. And I kind of love that about this film. So sit back, relax, and try to figure out with us, who is the best bro in this film? Is it Terrence Howard? Harold Perrineau? Morris Chestnut? Tay Diggs? Nia Long? It's one of them. It's the best man. Baby, one day you'll see,
baby. I want to teach a rock class, and the part when the metal singer goes for the falsetto.
Like a Coheed and Cambria?
I call that, and you got to have a crotch grab moment.
Speaking of crotch grabs, welcome to A Gentleman's Guide to Rom-Coms. My name is Kelly McCrillis. I am one of your hosts, and my other host who's sitting across from me enjoying a martini is...
Lorraine Graves, enjoying this martini that my wife made, and she was so apologetically 1950s housewife about it. She's like, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I just wanted to make you guys a martini.
I did have to point out that even though she was barefoot, and she was technically in the kitchen, she was also wearing pants. That really takes away from the whole
clink
vibe.
Me.
Oh, clinky. Clinky. Clinky again.
Listeners, dear listeners, we want to tell you about a really special thing that happened to us.
We went to our first... Wait, was it our... Yeah, it was our first movie back together.
No.
No?
That was Lepicine.
Oh, that was Lepicine. That was a different bad movie. It wasn't bad. It was just French.
It was very art house.
This movie that we saw was the Edgar Wright documentary, The Sparks Brothers. Oh my god,
it was so good.
Ryan, what's your adage about Sparks?
So Sparks is a band that I hadn't heard of, and I thought it was
me neither.
I thought it was a very like cultured person, especially when it came to like cool music. I was like, oh yeah, I listen to Radiohead. I'm on the up and up.
I've listened to Tom York's album without radio.
Yeah, listen to this album. But this movie introduced me to Sparks, which is a band that's been around since 1971 and is still going.
It's so crazy. It blows my mind every time. This is our word of mouth.
Yeah.
To get you guys to go see Sparks if you can. It's not released everywhere. It's like it's in larger metropolises, but if you have the opportunity to go find your local art house theater, it's got like really quirky personality, just like the artists. Like the filmmaking is great, but it's really about discovering this band that more people should know about.
And it's Edgar Wright who did, you know, the Shaun of the Dead movies, but he also did Baby
Cornetto
Driver
trilogy.
Yeah, the Cornetto trilogy, excuse me, Simon Pegg. But he also did Baby Driver and Scott Pilgrim.
Yep.
And so you can tell from those two movies that he has like an ear and eye for music.
Oh, very much.
And this documentary has the same sensibility where it really
hits it really does. And I just like the, like every documentary kind of has a format. This movie feels like it was made in 2020 in a way where it's like a lot of talking heads, a lot of found footage.
Yeah.
Like the only people interacting together are like brothers or like band members.
Yeah.
And, but for all of that, it still feels exciting.
Yeah. And Sparks is just such an interesting band with lots of different eras. And so to prove that, I'm going to play this for you. And now I'm going to play this for you.
All I do now is stick around. All I do now is stick around, dick around.
And then I'm going to play this for you because I'm actually the one editing.
Music that you can dance to, that and that alone is enough for me. Stock naked modern music, hotter than your mama will ever be.
So there you go. You got to go see it. See it. It was so nice to be in a movie theater with big ass movie theater speakers.
Oh my gosh. This was, I would not have wanted to like have my first time watching this not in a theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go get it.
So if you can go in a theater, speaking of theaters, we were at the theater.
Oh my gosh. This guy again.
So while we were there, kind of halfway through, we saw this guy like throwing popcorn at the screen. And then he just kind of like, you know what? Fuck this.
Yeah. He booed. He booed in the theater. Booed.
And I leaned over to Kevin, like, is that who I think it is?
Yeah. And we're it like, was. It was the train man.
It's the fucking train man.
And he was there. He left, thank God, because I think there were a couple ushers like walking over to do their job. Yeah. But before he left, he not only threw some popcorn, he threw a new essay at us. Mm-hmm. And it was my essay.
Yeah.
He apprehended it, got it, threw it back to us. Yeah. I gave it to Ryan.
Yeah.
And Ryan, what was it about?
Well, this is a Kelly's Patreon essay. It's about ostensibly James Bond, but it's really about being vulnerable.
As all humans should be. we should aspire to be anyway. I don't know. Can I tell you how I came up with this article?
Yeah.
I literally came up with, I was just thinking about James Bond and I came up with the title, Absence Makes the Heart Grow Bonder.
Just oh yeah.
For no reason. And then I was like, you know what? James Bond is a very lonely sort of human being, character, person.
He is.
Thing.
He's a Ronin. Nope, he's not a Ronin. He's nothing like a Ronin. He has a master, and his name is M.
Yeah, sometimes her name, sometimes his name.
His.
And I really wanted to talk about Casino Royale, which is my favorite Bond film. Is it yours?
I can't decide between that or GoldenEye, but
they're both great.
It's the same director too, but so different in its approach to Bond.
Yes, and I think all the Bonds are kind of different, but I like that with this particular film, they tried to gift Daniel Craig a heart. And to give James Bond a heart is a very, like, he can have a heart where he's like sparing somebody's life or, you know, he saves a kid or something like that. But to make James Bond the human penis love is a very interesting, difficult task. And so I just wanted to write about that.
I was literally making the case. This is such funny synchronicity. I was making the case to a coworker today, and he was like, oh, the Bond movies are all misogynistic. And I'm like, that's rather ignorant of you to say. You haven't even looked at Casino Royale, and you haven't even looked at, like, Daniel Craig's, like, force in those movies of, like, we're not doing that anymore.
I think we can...
There's some flaws, but
for sure, I think they're trying to go into a different direction with him.
Yeah, yeah. Especially in Casino Royale, mm-hmm. where he is... We see masculinity is a tender-hearted thing too,
right? Like some people get turned off by the whole him kissing the blood off of her fingers because mm-hmm. they think it's a little too sexual. But I don't know. I'm willing to forgive it because it's not James Bond. It is still an evolved Bond.
Yeah,
like people get better in steps. They're not perfect.
this has nothing to do with your essay, but I thought there was this interesting point that someone made. The point. One of the screenwriters of the series is James Bond is a film franchise that gets rebooted every 10 years with every Bond.
Uh-huh.
And it's been so well kept as a series. It's been able to last as long as it is because it's had the same producers for 40 years.
Yeah. Crazy.
And it's not some studio trying to like constantly rejigger the formula.
Sure.
And now that Amazon is going to own MGM, that all could change.
That's really weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like MGM, basically Bond was the last tent pole of MGM. It was the only thing keeping the tent like up, but like all the sides of the tent are like wrapped around Bond so he can't move anywhere. And so it was bound to happen. I wish it wasn't Amazon. I wish it was somebody like Paramount or Universal that got them. But that's fine. We'll just have to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of keeping the tent up, let's talk about our movie, The Best Man.
You want to tell me a story about it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Tell me a story, Turk.
Let me tell you a story about love, D'Artagnan.
I ask you about love, you'll probably quote me a sonnet.
I'm not much more than an interpreter, and not very good at telling stories.
That's the end.
What do you mean, that's the end? That's not. It's the beginning of something interesting.
Listen, that's the end of that saga.
The end.
So, The Best Man starts with
Taye Diggs.
Oh, yeah.
Freak out!
Before I get into it, I have to say this. I was watching the movie. I'm like, Taye Diggs is so hot. And Sarah's like, no. Morris Chestnut is the hot one. I was like, no, Taye Diggs is the hot one. She's like, Morris Chestnut. And we got into an argument about it for 5 minutes. Like, wait, what are we doing?
Who's hotter in this movie? Okay, can we start with the hotness of Taye Diggs really quick?
Your body's fierce.
Is it?
Like Taye Diggs.
Taye Diggs.
I mean, first 5 minutes, he's naked in a mm-hmm. tub, basically, with his lady, Robin. And so...
The best accidental porno music, too, in it.
Yeah. I mean, this movie is full of, like, late 90s, like, TV score.
Yeah.
But Taye Diggs, who is playing Harper, I love that he's a writer and his name is Harper because it just makes me think of HarperCollins.
Right.
I think that is the writer's doing something intentional, which is fine.
Yeah.
But... I'm going to come out and say this right now. No writer looks how
that good
Taye Diggs looks. Not the face. The face is fine. But when he takes off his shirt, Taye Diggs is the person who is like fighting Bruce Lee in a movie. Yeah. He's that ripped.
If you want to know what a writer looks like, look up Salman Rushdie. That's what a writer looks like.
Look up...
Writers date people who look like Taye Diggs.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Look up Ernest Hemingway, okay? Ernest Hemingway is known as like the athletic writer,
but
he's still thick.
He's still fatty.
Ryan and I are both writers. You got two kinds of writers. You got writers who are like, you know, settled and they sit into their chair and they're like, I'm very comfortable. And you have writers like me who are just very skinny because we mainly subsist off coffee.
Yeah.
And that's what you have. You don't have the hot, ripped writer. Or maybe you do and I just don't know him.
I'm trying to think of other writers we've encountered in real life. No, in our episodes so far. Are there other novelists that we've met?
William Goldman.
No. Characters that are writers. William Goldman is hot because he wrote The Princess Bride. He'll always have that.
William Goldman would look over at you. I think he'd raise an eyebrow and he'd go, fuck you, I like you.
Isn't Set It Up, isn't he a writer? Doesn't he want to be a writer?
Who? Set It Up?
The guy, the
boy
person.
Oh, no,
person.
She wants
with
to be a
writer. With Taye Diggs.
No, she
wants... to be a sports writer.
Yeah, she wants to be a writer. He wants to be
stuff.
Something else. He wants to be stuff is basically all you care about. No, she wants to be a writer. And she's really cute, but I'd say that she still is like... She's not an athlete who would go in the Olympics. Taye Diggs... would be like, you know what I think I'm going to try next? MMA.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd be like, yeah, in a year, you could probably be ready to, like, you know, fight in the MMA.
So hot Taye Diggs comes home to his beautiful apartment.
And wouldn't you know it, he's neurotic. He's a clean guy.
Oh, man. He's almost said STD. He's OCD.
No. If anybody has STD in this, it's Morris Chestnut.
Yeah. Or Quentin. Or
maybe Quentin. Well,
Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard. Yeah. Oh, man. I love Terrence Howard in this movie.
Yes. So he comes home, finds his lady love.
Robin.
Made a mess in his apartment.
Oh, no. But she's baking something delicious.
And they have this romantic night together. But he keeps thinking about, you know, what's next for him because he's this hotshot new novelist where his big debut novel is going to be picked up by Oprah for the Oprah Book Club.
So this is my... I actually liked this movie, but this is my first big sticking point for this movie. Mm-hmm. He comes home and he's like, by the way, my book got... It's going to be picked up by Oprah. I'm going to get interviewed. It's going on her like read this like list, which is especially in the 90s, the biggest deal that you could possibly get besides New York Times bestseller. Oprah's book list is the best thing that you can get.
It's the show.
And he's like basically wooden about it. And she's happy for him, but not as ecstatic as she should be.
Yeah.
We would be freaking out. Like, dinner wouldn't matter anymore. We would go on the town.
I think my headcanon was, maybe this wasn't as big a deal yet. Maybe this was like an aughts thing when it really like solidified, and this was like a newer thing, and this was like maybe an up and coming thing. That was my headcanon.
You think they were like advertising for Oprah right now?
Yeah. My other thing is, he already is successful, and he's got a really nice like brownstone in downtown Chicago.
It's
so
nice. Yeah,
whatever,
sure.
He was doing before his first novel came out, it was something like, I figured he was like a staff writer for the New Yorker or something. Oh, big.
Yeah,
that
or like
successful.
Maybe he was a professor of some kind.
Yeah,
but
he was
like nobody
doing
calls
well
him a
himself.
Professor. It's just that he's a writer, so he must be successful in some way.
Yeah, he's already
a nice
successful.
Place.
Yeah, it's one of those like.
I think it's. Do you think it's a '90s thing where everything was like everybody lives in a big house in the late '90s?
Kind of. I do like your defense of like a movie like Notting Hill, where it's like, well, yeah, he lives in Notting Hill, but he's got Spike.
He's got a roommate, and the place is messy.
Yeah,
like it's all of the furniture is like hodgepodge. It's like these are people who still have furniture from college.
What's funny is, you know, looking at the Nancy Myers thing of like these protagonists have really nice houses and the economics mm-hmm. don't matter for it. And like someone like my wife like is into it, where she's like, I want to be the kind of woman who owns that place. And then when we watch this movie and we're also writers, we're like looking at his house and we don't even get that feeling of like, ooh, I want that. We're like, fuck you. We're like, we don't buy it.
No. Well, yeah. Well, there's the logic of it, but I do actually want that house.
Oh, I want it, yeah. But it's not like, it's bitter envy. It's just like, ugh,
well,
guy.
I think this is just, I want to bring this up. I think this is a writer thing. As much as we learn to champion each other, the jealousy and envy is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Any success somebody else has as a writer, even if it's 99%, you're like, yeah, man, I'm so glad for you. There's 1% that's like, are you kidding me? Why not me?
My opinion is I hate it.
I mean, you haven't even read it.
If it's bad, I'll hate it because I hate bad writing. If it's good, I'll be envious and hate it all the more. You don't want the opinion of another writer.
So the setup for his like character arc for now is that he's just thinking about the future and what's going on for him, and he's not really focused on the here and now, and his girlfriend's right. Like, you're not focused on being present with
him. And she's obviously kind of in love with him, and he's not ready to commit to that yet. Mm-hmm.
He was very 90s, like,
I mean, it really
get
was.
Married. I can't get married.
Like, say I love you.
What? I can't do that.
They've been together for 2 years, and they have, like, he can't readily say I love you.
Come
it's like,
on,
dude,
bro.
What are you doing in that relationship?
Come on, bro.
Come on, brah. But anyway, he's going to his best friend's wedding. He's the best man. And on their way to the airport, when she's dropping him off, they also, we get to see them a little bit happy at the beginning, but the hard part of me liking him and Robin together is 90% of when we see them, they aren't getting along.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, we'll talk about that a little bit more later, but they're going to the airport and she brings up that this book that he just wrote that is like about to be published, that is going on Oprah's book list, is like, she's kind of jealous of some of the women that he depicts in this book. And we get that it's slightly autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about like some of the people he's about to go see.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, there's this weird Hitchcockian, like ticking time bomb
yeah.
that is gifted to us right here. And then he goes to New York.
Goes to New York, meets up with Harold Perrineau first. Also
who you
known
might
as
know.
Michael in Lost.
Or Mercutio in Romeo plus Juliet.
And I think he's my favorite character.
He's so cute. he's like your bro who is always the nerdier one. I would say of the group, he's kind of the Peter Pettigrew or the Neville Longbottom. Where
yeah.
like Peter Pettigrew gives him a bad look, but the Neville Longbottom where
yeah.
he obviously isn't as strong of a personality, but he's got heart where it counts.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And we find out that he is basically on deck to be working at a law firm, but isn't quite there. He needs to pass the bar.
He's working
first.
For the inner city.
Yeah, so he's doing...
He's taking care of inner city kids.
Yeah, nonprofit work with at-risk youth. And Taye Diggs is like, we gotta be a lawyer, man. You're around kids with guns. And he's like, mm.
Like, where does... So where does Taye Diggs come
get off
as a writer who... Like, is lucky to be successful. Any writer, even if you're brilliant, you're so lucky to be successful. And where does he come off, like judging somebody for doing good work. This is another problem I have with, this is problem number two I have with Taye Diggs' character.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like a writer. The choice that is made is, I am stoic, I am calm, I am wooden, and that is what makes me the logical writer. I like some things about him too.
Yeah.
But like this, I was like, why are you judging your buddy?
Well, I don't know.
It feels like an 80s movie.
No, I know.
He's like, go be a lawyer, make some money.
Well, you know, to jump ahead a little, let's get through the other friends so we can get to,
yeah.
So we can talk about the dynamic of what you're kind of alluding to.
Sure. The two of them land at the news station.
They go to BET.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's BET.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw the star in the background.
Yeah. And that's where they meet up with Jordan, mm-hmm. played by Nia Long.
Who is his friend who he almost hooked up with once.
Which Harold Perrineau kind of like was suspecting uh-huh. and gets it out of Taye Diggs.
Right. And there's a subplot also of he gave a book to Jordan because she's going to interview him about the book. He's going to give her the exclusive on his book. But she has passed it around to other people, and those people have passed it around to other people. And so it's circulating through his friend group right now.
And this is making him nervous because he didn't realize... A, he didn't realize how not obscured his semi-autobiographical stuff went.
Uh-huh.
And second, there are some things that if they figured out other things, then they will figure out a big thing that he does not want
right.
someone to figure out.
Right. I mean, what Ryan is basically circumventing is he slept with someone, and there's a hint of that in this book, and that's the time bomb we're talking about.
Yes, yes. But the movie doesn't...
It doesn't hint at it. Or yeah. It hints at it, but it
just
it doesn't...
says something's there.
And he's nervous and he wants to get that book back, but he doesn't know who has it now.
Yeah, so Jordan meets up with them, and I like this as like kind of like an RPG or like a D&D party.
Collecting
where you're like,
the party. So
you're
adding
members. So now they've added Jordan. And I like Jordan as just one of the bros. Like she's like, I'm just gonna hang out with the guys.
Like, yeah. I like her. She's kind of a leader in a weird way
yeah.
where she has the most command presence as the women of the group.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she is a bro.
Everyone here, they knew each other in college. That's why they're getting,
right.
That's why the wedding party is the way it is.
Exactly. And then they go watch Terrence Howard, who is like playing this guitar, like he's playing a 6-string guitar, like a classical guitar kind of.
Yeah.
And he's so charismatic and charming and also like... What's another word to describe Terrence Howard? I think he's a very unique character.
He's very Lothario.
Yeah, he's got some Lothario to him too. Immediately Taye Diggs starts digging on him for like jumping careers, like going from photographer to writer to musician to something else.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of their relationship seems like a big brother, little brother kind of deal.
Yeah, kind of competitive and also just kind of like just kind of like there's almost a jealousy from Taye Diggs that Quentin can jump to a different career.
Whereas Taye Diggs is so like as Quentin describes him, he's a control freak.
Yeah. And it seems and I totally get this. This is what I relate to about Taye Diggs about is like he's all about staying focused on the thing and just like getting the
a lot of
thing
he has
done.
Structure.
Yeah.
Whereas Quentin is kind of more like a puck. He's like, I'm here to like shake things up.
Yeah.
I want to call if we're making a D&D group, I want to call Quentin the sage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Taye Diggs really is just jealous of Quentin's like freedom.
Yeah.
To do whatever he wants.
And so they meet up with him and then lo and behold, the man of the hour, the chestnut himself shows up
and we get that he's a star football player. He's a running back for
the Giants,
the Jets, the Giants.
I think he's on the Giants because they were listening to somebody talk about the Giants earlier.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, he's there taking pictures with hotties and they're like, oh, Morris Chestnut, how's it going?
Yeah.
And you can tell like that, you know, since they're all old college friends, it's like, you know, all the BS and like the stardom of him is like cut down and they're all just good friends.
Yeah.
Right. And Taye Diggs is the best man. Taye Diggs.
So then they go home to Lance's house.
Oh, we also meet Shelby here.
Shelby. Yes.
So Shelby, who is a lot akin to one of my ex-girlfriends. She wasn't that bad.
I didn't want to bring it up, but you
she wasn't
it up.
That bad, but still. Yeah,
I
was getting flashback.
It was very
trauma.
Relatable.
There was some trauma.
Oh,
brought
I got
up
some
this.
Trauma watching it. I was like, oh my god.
She's played by Melissa D'Souza, and I think she pulls in a really good performance as the controlling, like, you have to do what I say girlfriend, because what's his name? Murch? Who's Harold? Who's Harold Perrineau's? What's his name? His name's Julian, but they call him Murch.
Yeah.
He's dating her, and it's obvious they know her from college, and she is just super controlling and manipulative and like dramatic.
Yes. And highly manipulative. And he is, as Chandler Bing would say, whoop-haw!
I do like this instance where everybody else around is annoyed by Shelby.
Yeah.
And like, there's this moment where they're like, oh, here comes. She's going to drag him away from us.
I mean, I don't want to get too detailed, but that's how it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of like, we're having a good time. And then
I have
the time of the night.
There was somebody I dated where I was like, I'm sorry, guys, I have to go and take care of something.
Yeah,
man. Hey, people out there, be good to your partners.
Like, this movie must have been so cathartic for you.
Like, yeah, watching his ending. Well, I mean, that's kind of not in that same way, but like, I didn't meet a stripper and then like be like, yo, let's fall in love. But like, finding love after a horrible relationship like that is just so wonderful.
Absolutely.
So we basically get to a card game. We meet Mia first.
Yes, we meet Mia, and it's a great sequence because she comes down the stairs, and it's Lance's giant mansion house, which has got to be in Connecticut, right? Like, there's no mansion on Manhattan that size. You gotta get out of there.
And it was also weird because it felt modern in that way where as soon as the 90s made this look modern, it was like the house where we went into and we're like, ooh, I don't like this anymore. it was modern for a second.
It was very trendy mansion. And she comes down the stairs and the camera does the male gaze. And this is why I think people need to shut up about the male gaze. The male gaze is storytelling. It's telling us something about the characters
sometimes,
in this movie.
Sometimes it is. I'm going to,
in
like,
this case,
I'm going to meet you in the middle. No, in this case,
that's
it
what
is
I mean. It's always about context. Yeah. Always about context. Sure. You can't just say blanketly, you can't do it. In this movie, it was perfect.
In this movie is talking about like what it means to have a conception of your life and how, when that's turned on your head, like what that does to your ego.
Yeah.
And Mia, who's played by Monica Calhoun, comes down the stairs and it's obvious that everybody is super attracted to her. Like Lance, it's his fiance. We haven't even said
that. Lance is like, Lance's fiance.
He's like, oh yeah, that's my girl. And then even Taye Diggs is like, ooh.
I would say, but especially Taye Diggs is like, ooh. And this moment.
And it's funny because he's also attracted to Jordan, who we met earlier in the movie.
Which is, this is great storytelling because it's never a binary thing where you're only attracted to one person, especially when it's different people from your past.
Right.
It kind of stacks
especially
up.
Especially like someone either you've had. And this is what we get here. Mia, as we find out later, Taye Diggs has a history with, even if it's a very short one. And with Jordan, he has an unconsummated history.
Yeah,
with.
Which is almost more
dramatic.
Nerve-wracking.
Yeah. There's more tension there.
Really eats at you.
I mean, that's that thing that you see all the time in this genre where it's like one person in a couple is like, It would be one thing if you'd slept with her, but it's another thing that you didn't.
Yeah.
Because
the question will
that,
not.
Yeah, that means that, like, oh, do you want to?
And me, who's only really dated Sarah and married Sarah, it's all a question. Everyone's been a question. The whole world a question.
So can I ask you, like, we were meant to think that, like, Mia is, like, the end-all, be-all hotness, mm-hmm. right? I mean, she's beautiful for sure, but like, I was like on the Robin Jordan train in this movie, and so when they introduced me, I was like, oh, she's nice, but like they dress her up like she is a school marm kind of, and maybe that's just the '90s talking about her cardigan.
Well,
but
no, that's the thing, because Lance is kind of like, I'm excited to marry her because our plan is that she's just going to be a housewife and she's going to have kids for me.
Yeah.
And all the guys...
Which is fine. I'm not judging that.
But his bros are like, whoa, is that what she wants, bro?
Yeah.
And they give him proper ribbing for him. Like, oh yeah, that's all she wants. She just wants to be a stay-at-home wife for me.
I think this is also where we find out that Lance is reading the book.
Yes.
Lance is the one that's had it. Quentin had it at one point, but Quentin doesn't have it now. Lance has it. And Lance seems to be the person that Taye Diggs least wants to have it.
Yeah. But to answer your question,
yeah,
between all the women in this movie of like
the question that I'm asked,
Mia is short and petite, which is like my type, but Nia Long is also very similar. Like they're both short,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm just kind of like, if I had to choose.
I'm a Nia guy too.
I don't know. I can't choose.
You can't choose.
I can't choose.
Yeah, I'm a Nia Robin guy. Not just because my wife's name is Robin, but I just like their personalities more.
Yeah, but I got it. When she was coming down the stairs, I was right there with him.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I mean, this is what is true about beauty, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we're the guys all go off and play poker, and there's this like scene.
It's a wonderful scene.
It is. I think it's the. I don't love the cinematography in this movie, but I love the cinematography in this scene.
Yeah.
Where they're like going around the table and they're all ribbing each other and they're having like a guy's night and they're playing poker and they're talking about like how Lance has cheated on Mia a bunch of times.
Countlessly.
Yeah. He's kind of a dog, but he's like, I'm leaving all that behind. Like I'm getting married and I don't need that anymore. And he's like, and the thing is, I know that Mia's never cheated on me. And that's when Quentin comes into his own.
And Quentin's like, oh, really? Well, the setup for Quentin is like, Quentin is like busting everyone's balls.
Mm-hmm.
And Taye Diggs is like, who cares about you, Quentin? You're just a bullshitter. And Quentin is like, I'm the bullshitter?
I'm the bullshitter?
Really? And you can just tell that he's hurt. And he's vain, and he's like, I'm going to prove that you're the king of bullshit.
I almost wouldn't call him, I would call Taye Diggs more vain.
Right.
Right, but, and like, yeah, you're right, Quentin is the truth teller.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm not gonna be derided like that.
Yeah, he's also chaos.
I'm going to prove you wrong, so, like, the most thorough way I can prove you wrong.
The music in the scene is also kind of like 90s late night porn.
Yeah.
but besides that, it's really tense. And the more Quentin starts like probing the question about whether Mia has actually been faithful to Lance, he just pushing and pushing mm-hmm. and pushing. And then Lance like almost all but flips the table and goes all aggro and grabs Quentin. And it's like, man, Lance, you got a rage issue there, friend. And like just even mentioning that she might have slept with someone else, I was thinking maybe it was Quentin. Like maybe first that like Quentin was like, are you sure?
Yeah.
And sure, he's being kind of shitty, but like Lance's reaction is like way over the top.
Yeah. And it just shows how all these men are really vulnerable.
Well, they're very insecure.
That's what I mean. Yeah. They're not being vulnerable with each other, but
I mean, they have kind of are.
Yeah,
they it's like this weird balance of insecurity, masculinity, and closeness.
Yeah,
that you see a lot more like in the 90s and early 2000s. And I'm not gonna say like all of society has evolved, but as I've grown up, I've seen like a lot of men, especially a lot of younger men, get closer and a little less like. What is the word I'm looking for? It's not standoffish, but like. Walled, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe that's not true across the board. But anyway, in this movie, there's like a lot of walls up, a lot of pretense, a lot of ego.
Yeah, especially they're older and they're in their 30s and they want to project success. And what
they're all successful.
But that's what I love about Harold Perrineau is that he is like the most down to earth in his career.
Very much, yeah.
And it's like, I don't relate to this successful football player. I don't relate to this successful novelist who's getting picked up by Oprah. And I don't relate to this multi-talented, like, savant guy who can do whatever he wants. I relate to Harold, who his job may not be, like, flashy, but it's still important.
Yeah. It's arguably more important than any of their other jobs.
Yeah.
And I would say that Harold, but we have Quentin and his main point is to let the truth come out and to let people be their most open and honest.
Yeah.
And I like how he starts in on Harold, who plays Murch. Quentin, Terrence Howard, is trying to get Harold away from Shelby, his girlfriend. He's trying to be like, look, nut up and like stand up for yourself. He's not like, you know, treat your woman bad, but he starts on him very early being like, you know, respect yourself enough to ask and say, I need this thing.
Yeah.
And it's a very healthy thing to do for a friend. And so I liked seeing that.
Definitely.
And so, you know, the night continues on, and, you know, I mean, really the next thing that happens the next day is, you know, Taye Diggs continues hanging out with Mia, right?
Jordan.
And we keep getting these flashbacks to, like, things that happened in their college days.
Yeah.
And
it got so close between them.
It got so close. They, like, made out. She took off Taye Diggs' clothes to see Taye Diggs' rider body. those delts.
And we're just like,
those traps.
Thank you, Jordan. We needed to see that.
and it all leads up to this, like, the night before the wedding. And Robin, in the meantime, Taye Diggs' girlfriend, is not coming until the wedding, which is on Sunday.
Yeah.
So the night before the wedding, they're all like, they're doing the rehearsal, and
Lance is getting closer and closer to he's reading the book.
Yeah, he's reading the book, and like Taye Diggs is like, oh my god, I gotta get that book back.
There's a lot of drunk book reading. I'm very impressed.
I am very impressed, and the reason this makes sense to me is they do mention a couple of times that even though in one respect Lance is a meathead, he's also graduated like magna cum laude.
Summa cum laude. Yeah.
See, obviously I didn't. What was your GPA when you graduated?
I don't know, like 3.
Mine was like 3.4. I didn't graduate anywhere near getting a summa.
I think I was something good.
Did you? No, you didn't. Well, you'd remember if you had a tassel.
I definitely didn't get I didn't get 3.5. I know that for sure.
Yeah, me neither.
I got no tassel.
I was so close. But anyway, so like he's reading this book and he's also drinking a lot, but I'm like, no, that makes sense. You're a smart dude. So then comes the bachelor party. And right before the bachelor party, Jordan, there's a lot of people in this movie.
But, you know, Taye Diggs does kind of confuse the two, too.
Yeah, that's true. Oh. And everybody also this whole time is trying to figure out who they are in the book.
Yeah.
Which is another like layer of like awkwardness,
and another set of character names to remember.
Yeah, but she walks up to him very plainly, is like, "Look, I like you. I want to sleep with you. I'd like to sleep with you tonight after the bachelor party. I thought this was a very realistic scene, even though it's something that very rarely happens. Like, rarely is somebody that upfront and honest about their needs and desires.
Yes.
But she, earlier in the movie, she's like, I haven't slept with somebody in 6 months. I'm super horny. Mm-hmm. And Taye Diggs is around and she sees him in his boxers earlier in the movie. And she's like, he leaves a room and she verbally goes, oh.
Yeah.
What do you think about this scene? Who can blame her?
So I think my problem is I'm just not hot enough to relate to this incident happening.
Well, no. Can you relate to Jordan, though?
To wanting to have sex with Taye Diggs? Yes, I can.
Well, to anybody. Like, I mean, because, like, let's say you've been celibate for a bit,
mm-hmm.
and you see somebody who you've had a huge crush on, and the opportunity is there and you're single, like... Could you ever approach somebody in such a... I know this really isn't your personality, to approach somebody in a way and say, look, I know that you're dating somebody, but for one night, can you and I be us?
What's that Hugh Grant line where it's like, I don't know, I don't have the confidence to just go up to him and say, hey, babe, how about me and you? Like, I think that's Four Weddings and a Funeral, where he's like complaining about being so British, where he doesn't have the American confidence to just go up to him. So I definitely, I'm coming from that angle of things where I'm very like insecure Hugh Grant, but I don't look like Hugh Grant, so I can't even have that in my corner. I'm just an insecure, not that attractive British man. And I was really thinking, I'm like, well, I'm married now and I've been married for several years. So me in my 30s, like, I'm relating to them in one respect of, like, mm-hmm. being in your 30s, because there's, like, kind of, not quarter-life crisis, but kind of, like, 30-something crises.
Sure.
You know? So I was relating to that, but I wasn't relating to the romance stuff.
My imagination works a lot more when I watch a movie like this, where I try to place myself in their position, where I'm like, if I were single right now, could I accomplish X?
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. I was like, okay, Ryan, empathize.
Do it!
And I was thinking about in college and right before Sarah and I started dating, which was the first year after college, and me pursuing women and like having a scene like this with any of the women that I was kind of pursuing. Mm-hmm. And it just, because I hadn't slept with anyone before, there was never that aspect to pursuing.
I'm talking
pursuing.
About now, though.
Now? No, I'm married. That's
no,
why
no,
I
no,
can't
no, no,
be...
no. I'm saying, imagine. We're using our imagination.
I know. I'm trying to go back to a place where I would be in that headspace.
No, it's not about being in that headspace. Uh-huh. It's about saying, okay, let's throw away my life right now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
And I am single. Like, let's say, heaven forbid, let's say Sarah was whisked off to another dimension and you're never going to see her again. I didn't want to kill Sarah.
It's the thing in How I Met Your Mother where it's like she dies of a gentle disease of like, you know, these kittens would like stomped her to death or something.
Yeah. And it was pleasant.
Yeah.
let's say now you're in this position with somebody that you know you have chemistry with, you know they are attracted to you.
Well, I as a viewer, whether or not I'm coming at it from an empathetic point of view, I still say, you got your girlfriend.
Right. Okay. I'm talking about you being Jordan right now.
Oh, I definitely see where Jordan's coming from.
That's what I'm talking
about.
I'm talking about Jordan.
Jordan,
not Taye Diggs.
Jordan knows better because she knows full well that he's got
I don't think Jordan
girlfriend.
Cares.
No, she doesn't. Yeah, she doesn't.
So
it's not a completely sympathetic move on her part.
No, it's definitely not. I'm not even saying that. I'm saying, let's say he didn't have a girlfriend.
Then yeah, absolutely.
Still, could you approach so directly? Is what I'm asking.
If I in a different life, I might be able to like do it.
Okay, I think I could now. I think I could really be upfront with somebody about like my desires toward them, but it wasn't probably until I was like 27 would I have the confidence.
Oh, okay.
To
so
do it.
I will say the ironic thing about dating Sarah and then marrying Sarah is that my confidence in myself just as being myself skyrocketed
because that's not ironic. That's what happens when you date somebody and they love you and you have a healthy relationship.
And it's like, I was so not confident in myself in college.
Sure.
And had I had the confidence I have now, I think I would have been
dated
a lot happier.
A couple more people. But so what happens here is, to move away from our personal feelings about it, Taye Diggs is propositioned basically by Jordan. And he's like, yeah, I think so.
Right.
And she's like, don't say yes and not come.
Yeah. Don't.
and then they all go to the bachelor party. And this is the first moment where,
this is the
where
moment.
Harold steps away.
With this part of the movie, I had to pause it, and Sarah was, as always, watching from the corner of her eye while I was watching on the headphones, and she gave me that look. I'm like, don't judge me. Because she just saw the strippers come in. She's like, what are you watching? I'm like, it's The Best Man.
I'm watching the strippers. Get out.
But I literally had to be like, I have to close the curtains now because cool children walk by this street every day.
I mean... well, hold on. Harold does tell off. He doesn't tell off Shelby, but he walks away from Shelby, which is a big first step.
He has a good first step. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they get to this party where I don't think they're just strippers. They could be, but
there was a gentleman with them.
There was a gentleman who very much dressed like a pimp.
Yeah.
And he brought them in and they did their stripper thing. But
it was very studio comedy stripper, though. It wasn't.
I mean, there was a cane, there was a feather and a cap, there was a velour suit. It wasn't velour, but it was a suit.
But it barely got R-rated.
Yeah, but at one point in time, he does raise his hand and say, shut up to somebody. And it's like, it feels rather that like 1980s, early 90s pimp look.
Yeah, a little gross.
But basically, the strippers come upstairs. Taye Diggs is getting super drunk after he finally steals the book back from Lance. Number four on my list of Taye Diggs wrongs. Taye Diggs, take that book, throw it out the window. That's all you got to do.
Mm.
Why are you trying to keep this book? Flush it down a toilet, tear it page by page, go into the bathroom, be like, no, sorry, I just ate something bad. I'll be in here for a minute.
That's a good point.
He did. He basically takes the book and he puts it in his jacket. And of course, when he's getting rubbed up on by ladies, by day strippers, Lance finds the book and he's like, Lance makes a pretty... like significant like leap in logic to say he's trying to hide this book from me rather than just picking up his book as if he was maybe looking at it at one point in time.
Well, why would he be looking at his own book? He wrote it. He doesn't need to look at it.
Maybe. I don't know. As a writer, aren't you always obsessed with looking at your own stuff?
After it's published, though.
Have you published anything?
No.
Okay. No, me neither. Well, I have, but it's all like newspaper stuff. It doesn't matter. It doesn't count. But and before this, Taye Diggs also almost confesses.
Yeah.
That, as we understand at this point in time, he has slept. At one point in time, like, Mia found out that Lance cheated on her, and then to comfort her, Taye Diggs slept with her.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't reveal it completely in the book.
No.
He just hints at it.
He thinks he does a really good job of
covering it up, yeah. But he does not.
Yeah.
And so at that point in time in the party, Harold's paranoia falls in love with a stripper. And
what does he say? He's like, "Do you love me?"
Yeah, do you love me?
And she's like, "Yeah, baby." Does yeah. the stripper thing.
But then he follows her downstairs.
Oh, and may we say the stripper is played by Regina Hall?
Yeah, which is crazy.
Who just directed One Night in Miami, which is this like awards season darling. And it's like she gets, it's just such a.
It's so cool to see somebody go from like actor to director.
But it totally points out like the absurd double standard of like, well, you know, my first role was stripper in Malcolm D. Lee's movie, and now I'm respected director, you know, making this movie.
We should also point out, I guess, since you brought him up, that Malcolm Lee is Spike Lee's cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I forgot when the titles came up and it was 40 Acres and Mule production. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Spike Lee also produced this.
This is going to be a not bad movie. This will be something worth looking at.
Yeah, yeah. And so basically, he, just to go on Harold's like little side quest right now in our D&D campaign, he chases Candy, her name, Regina Hall's character, out, and he like has a conversation with her, and he's like, "Hey, I thought we had a connection." And she's like, "I'm a stripper. I'm meant to like make you have one." And then he quotes some literature at her, and she like knows the quote, and they're like, "Maybe there's something here." But in the meantime, upstairs, Lance has figured out what Taye Diggs did it back in college.
And beats the shit out of him.
Beats the absolute shit out of him. And I want to say, there's this moment where like he jumps over a table like linebacker style, even though I think he's a running back. And I was terrified of Lance.
Yeah.
Lance, it's a Morse good, Chestnut is terrifying.
It's a good scary thing because it's like, if you look at any football player, like, it's like, what do you do if they're the ones causing problems? If they're going to like start
Nothing.
A fight.
You don't do anything.
How do you combat that?
Well, this is the other thing. Like, the only reason I feel like Taye Diggs even stands a chance against him is because we've seen him naked.
Yeah, we know he has some muscles.
We know he can take a hit. He's lean. Well, he's fit. He's super. Yeah. He's got a rig on him, I guess.
But he is not a heavyweight. Like, it's a heavyweight versus a middleweight. He is not going to be able to hold his own, like, one-on-one.
Yeah, he's a middleweight rig, whereas Lance is a giant.
Yeah.
He's a giant of a man.
Yeah.
And he basically almost kills him. And Quentin at this point in time steps in because he also saw, he saw and got disappointed in Taye Diggs. And there was this disappointed look when he saw Taye Diggs hiding the book where I was like, oh man, I hate for Quentin to get disappointed because Quentin has kind of the least ego. And that means if Quentin's disappointed in you, you'd done something wrong.
Oh yeah. I would hate that.
Yeah. Oh, so at that point in time, like, he beats the crap out of him and the wedding's off. And then we jump to the airport, right?
Yeah. And so he picks up his girlfriend.
Taye Diggs picks up Robin.
Yeah. And basically can't hide what happened and tells her everything. He's caught her up and also confesses to, well,
almost. Yeah. Because he shows up later that night after he gets beat up at Jordan's house, where she is wearing the sexiest thing. Hot damn. She's wearing the sexiest outfit ever. And he shows up and he's beat up and he gets mad at her and she gets mad at him and they don't sleep together.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's a very sitcom like thing to happen.
Yeah, very much so. And so he shows up and he confesses and then Robin's walking away from him ready to leave after they've like talked everything over. And he's like, "I need you." And it's that moment in a movie where a character who has been standoffish reaches out and says, "I'm willing to be to show my insecurities to you." Basically, he's like, I can't find Lance and fix this whole situation without you.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay, for now, I'll stay with you.
Yeah. And it's very conditional, temporary. Yeah, she's like, I'm not going to be a dick. I will help you.
And so they go to the wedding. They can't find Lance. And Taye Diggs looks really tired. And then finally, Lance shows up. And
well, Taye Diggs figures out, like, Lance is like, "I just came to tell my parents that the wedding's off." And they're all like, "No, we have to fix this." And Taye Diggs is like, "What do we do? What do we do?" "Lance, pray. And Lance is like,
yeah, because there's this whole subplot where Lance is super religious and Taye Diggs is not. And but he still like will, I think, what's the word? He humors is the word. Thank you.
So he gets him into like the priest's office, and
which is where all of these scenes happen in any of these movies. Like, yeah, if Hugh Grant's having a hard time, yeah, with getting married, they're in like the priest's office. Yeah.
And so Taye Diggs and Lance, they work it out, and it's really, yeah, good. Of
it's like, a good friendship thing.
Taye Diggs like saying it and like confessing, and Lance really is working hard to like forgive
set it
him.
Aside.
He's like,
and so they get him to the altar.
Well, he does pray.
Yeah.
And I really like one of the flashbacks to when like he screwed up and he's like talking to Taye Diggs, like, what do I do? And one of his lines is, Lord, forgive my wayward dick.
Yeah. It's so good. And I mean, Lance is kind of a conundrum of a character, which makes him human, right?
Yes.
Because he's super religious, but he's so promiscuous. Like, yeah, at one point in time, we get this story about him having sex with two sets of twins at the same time. And like, while he's, I don't think he's dating anybody at that point, but like, you got to imagine that that continues while he's dating Mia. But he's also super religious and is like, he's one of those religious people who's like, continues to sin the same sins, and then is just like, forgive me, I know that this is my wrong.
It's a very Catholic thing to be.
Yeah, he's kind of, he's like, you know, as
I'm not saying Catholics are people who are just like Lance, but
no,
it's a,
no, it's but a, it's a very medieval thing where he's like, as long as I do my contrition right, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And so Taye Diggs basically confesses. There's this confessional scene in a church where, like, you know, he confesses what's wrong and he gets down on his knees and asks for forgiveness from his friend.
And Lance says the most truthful thing is like, I need to forgive you, but that doesn't mean I have to like you.
Right. But then he gets him to the altar. And this is like a very intense scene where Lance is crying. He's like crying during the wedding. And Mia, his fiance at the time, is like taking those tears as, oh, you're getting emotional about the wedding, and they're saying their vows to each other. But we keep doing these flashbacks where during his wedding vows, Lance is flashing back to his imagination of how great the sex must have been between Taye Diggs and Mia.
Yeah.
It's intense.
It's brilliant filmmaking because it's using pure cinema to show us what's going on in his mind. Mm-hmm. And it's showing us a very complicated emotional palette that
there's
he's
a lot going on at one time
because he's working so hard because
he knows that he needs to marry her. He knows that she's the best person for
him. He's working through forgiving Lance, but he's also working through forgiving Mia.
And he doesn't even need to. He knows that he doesn't need to forgive her. He knows that she's kind of within her rights. He's working to set aside his need to forgive her. Almost.
Yeah, and the having this flashback while he's hearing her vows and while he's repeating his vows.
And he's hearing her like moan.
Yeah, and it's during this very holy ceremony where he's literally being bonded to this woman for life. And it's this, like I said, ceremonial moment where he is letting go of this
right
terrible feeling that's in his heart.
It felt more like a purge.
Yeah, purge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's a religious purge.
Right. It felt like if you were in an ayahuasca kind of church and you were purging, like at the same time as a Catholic religious wedding.
Yeah.
At this, like, and it's a very odd mix of emotions that ends up working really well.
Yeah.
And the only time that forgiveness does come is a couple minutes later during the... Oh, hold on. I don't want to leave Harold behind. Harold breaks up with Shelby on the steps, and he's like, that's right. I'm going to go to the wedding with this awesome stripper named yeah. Candy.
And it's
and
just
we're
so
all like,
yeah!
Yes! And Quentin's over there like, yeah! One of my favorite scenes earlier is where Quentin is like telegraphing in the background that Harold should grow some balls, and he's just like grabbing his pants the whole time. Anyway, so they
Knew that you were going to like this scene. I'm like, Kelly would be chuckling at this
scene.
Oh,
it's so funny. So then Taye Diggs's best man speech is really what does it.
Yeah.
It's what pushes Lance over the edge of actually forgiving him.
Yeah, it seals the deal.
Mia gave me too much credit for this union. I have learned from them what it means to be truly committed to another person. I have learned the importance of seizing the moment, because you can't go back. You can never go back. You have to live for today, not for what was or what could have been. And what will be, no one can say. But sometimes you just have to step out on faith.
That admission is what brings Lance over to the the side of forgiveness.
So then, you know, he has his denouement conversation with Nia Long, and it's very nice. And then he dances with Robin. And then he's like, I'm going to prove to you that I'm in the moment. And then he proposes.
Right after she says, we need to talk about a lot of stuff, which, dude, that's not the right time. I'm glad it worked out for you.
But the movie is just kind of like, aw. And I think we're all like, No, it's much.
You guys have a lot to get through right now.
Yeah, and it's kind of like when Chandler in Friends does his first proposal to Monica, where it's like, no.
And but Friends knows enough not to give that to him, and it's not until later when she proposes that it actually works. And
that's the correct time for them to get engaged. Yeah. And so it's like, what I got from the movie is like, okay, Taye Diggs is ready to be in a full
relationship. Yeah, yeah. Not now, to be married.
But we don't even married right now. No. He's not ready for that.
He's not. No, not even close.
And like the funny thing about Taye Diggs' character is like, he's like, oh, I don't want to get married. I can't handle commitment, which is such a 90s cliche.
Blah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And especially for a writer who committed to writing a book. Like, yeah. You can fucking commit, you asshole.
So I kind of say that's kind of a dumb, like.
It's a trope of the 90s. For sure.
Yeah.
But then one of my favorite parts of the movie, they all do the electric slide.
Yeah.
And let me say, line dancing is something that I do not enjoy very much in a country standpoint, but as soon as you bring it into like the hip hop genre, I'm like, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I love it.
And so it's a fun ending, and the uncle's dancing, and Jordan and him are fine, and
Also, don't get engaged at another person's wedding.
No, you're stealing the spotlight. Don't do it. Taye Diggs.
No.
Hold on, wait. Can I do this? Taye Diggs. And then, like, we have a fun afterward where, like, earlier in the wedding, Terrence Howard, like, slowly slips the garter onto Shelby's legs because she's the one who, like, caught the...
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, yeah. And they end up sleeping together, which is, like, you could see coming from a mile away, but I still like that it happened.
I want to say, I've seen the garter ceremony being phased out.
It is, yeah, for sure.
But... what's funny to me is every wedding I've been to where they do the garter ceremony, that couple has gotten a divorce. Every wedding that they have not done a garter ceremony, they are still married.
That's so true. It's true for me too. I didn't realize it until right now.
Audience, think about the weddings.
The last time I went to a wedding where they did a garter ceremony was 2016.
Uh-huh.
They got divorced 2 years later.
It's weird. It's awkward. Don't do it.
Don't do it. It's fine without it. You can shoot the garter, but don't
shoot it.
You don't
shoot
it. Just don't put it back on
don't
someone.
Don't kaboot it.
Don't kaboot it. Shoot it, not kaboot it.
Speaking of kabooting, let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to do some talk.
I would love that.
And we are back once again with trope talk. It's like lobe talk, but with less cartilage.
Did you say lobe talk?
Yeah, like your earlobe. Earlobe, you know, less cartilage, like your earlobe.
Just rhyme a B with a P?
Yeah, it totally works. It totally works. Doesn't work. Can't believe it works.
Oh, well, my earlobes. My earlobes say yes.
Ah!
I'm going to call them earlobes from now on.
Earlobes. So,
what's our trope today?
I don't know how to make it tropical.
You know how to trop it? Trob it?
I listen to psychotropic music. There's this thing about all of the main characters that at first... You think Taye Diggs is like the moral center of this movie, but the movie slowly is like, no, there is no character who represents the moral center.
Correct.
They're all kind of trying their best,
kinda
to pursue it, but they're also very flawed humans.
Yes.
So I kind of just wanted to pitch a tent and camp out in...
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
I just wanted to kind of...
You're in that tent with James Bond right now.
Yeah. I want to figure out what this movie's doing with its morality, because I think it's intentionally complicated.
Yeah. I think what we have here is characters who all have conflicts that they've made for themselves.
Yes.
And in a movie, when you're crafting characters, they always say that coincidence should get you into trouble, not out of it. Mm-hmm. In a similar way, I think conflict is something you should get your characters should get themselves into. It's not something that other people should put them into.
Right.
And what makes these characters complicated is that all of the choices that they have made in their lives are what are affecting them negatively right now.
Yeah.
They've also affected them positively, which makes them well-rounded.
Yeah.
But like if we just take each of the characters individually, Taye Diggs is obvious. He's written this book. And it's a book that was going to get published no matter what. And it's a book that exposes his dirty secrets to his friends. And so there's something in him that wants to be found out, but he's denying that.
He seems to behave in a way of like, oh, I'm just the observer of my friends doing bad things.
It's a very pretentious way to live.
Yeah. And it's like,
all writers have thought of themselves at that point, but they grew out of it. Taye Diggs hasn't yet.
The writer thinks that they're just the observer of the human condition and not the person who is participating in the human condition.
Yeah, when really that's he's full of shit.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, you know, Ernest Hemingway, say what you will about him, but I think he figured out, he's like, no, I've done some shit.
Yeah, early and often he was like, I've lived.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not always well.
Yeah.
Granted, you know, he also shot himself, so, you know.
Sorry.
but then, you know, you have Lance, who is admitted, he's very much an admitted cheater, and yeah. He feels bad about that, but he also is kind of a conundrum. He's a paradox. He's someone who knows that he's bad, but still acts against his instincts, and then at the same time, he has obvious rage issues. And a huge, I think the biggest out of all of them, maybe the biggest insecurity, because
yeah.
As soon as he thinks that he's not good enough to be loved perfectly, then what's the point of being him?
Yeah. And he relishes
the attention,
but the contradiction of being able to be the way that he is, but demands that other people be perfect and
right.
That he's allowed to be a total screw up. But if he's going to be with someone, he expects them to be angels.
Correct. And then we have Murch, who is Harold.
Yeah.
The Harold.
And he's the most sympathetic one because his, you know, his sins are just kind of like, oh.
Well, they're sins that don't. The only way they affect others is they take him away from people.
Yeah.
And everybody else is subjected to Shelby's personality,
I guess.
He makes
himself a sacrificial lamb.
Right. Yeah. Because, I mean, his sins are sins that I am duly familiar with, where you are trying to be good to someone who is horrible for you.
Yeah.
And that's not good for either party.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's something. And I think that's part of the thing. If you're not strong enough to realize that you are horrible for someone and they are horrible for you,
yeah.
Then you're also partially to blame.
Yeah. But there's something about him that really wants to succeed. Because,
mm-hmm.
Like, no. If there's just somehow I can get through to her.
Right. If somehow I can be good enough that she will respond in kind.
And she will be finally able to trust me to go out with the guys.
Right, exactly. If I'm so good to her that she allows me off my leash a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But
his destruction, he doesn't hurt others in his activity. He really only hurts himself.
Which makes him the best of them. Whereas, let's take our last one, Quentin. I mean, because we can talk about the other women in this, but they are secondary to the men in this film.
Yeah.
Quentin is an agent of chaos and someone who wants the truth to come out no matter what. And I think he's so tired of being made fun of and judged that he is like, okay, let's pass this judgment onto everybody else because you're not perfect either.
Yeah, and one of his flaws is that he's painfully transparent and like he wants to, you know, he's more of an artist than Taye Diggs because he's like, I'm being, you know, completely upfront with you on how I see things. And like, he is like, his behavior is straight up misogynist. Like, he calls all women bitches. He just doesn't respect them. He mm-hmm. just sleeps around. And yet he thinks it's a badge of honor because he's just being transparent with them. He's not trying to cover anything up.
And it's odd, though, because I would say that what this movie is saying is his level of misogyny is verbal and I would almost say performative.
Yeah.
Whereas in his honesty, he's almost more respectful than Taye Diggs is in his holier than thou attitude about his respect.
Right. And that's
odd, isn't it?
That's the badge of honor thing where he's like, cause like, Harold Perrineau like kind of calls him out. It's like, hey, can we stop the cursing? And
yeah.
mm-hmm. he just like Quentin's like, what? Just like, I'm going to just say what I say. Like,
yeah.
Why does it matter?
Yeah. And like, there's a laissez-faire attitude toward morals that he has that is both cool, but it's also disrespectful at the same time. But he earns a smidge of that respect back since he is being honest. And I think as humans, we respect people who are honest because it's so hard for us, like not honest, but openly like truth telling,
yeah,
like unabashedly truth telling, because it's so hard for us to do that in real life.
Yeah. And like, there's a difference between Quentin and Lance. Cause like Quentin sleeps around, Lance sleeps around. The difference though is Quentin's
up front about it.
He's totally truthful.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's trying to like have his cake and eat it too, where he's trying to like maintain a serious relationship. So
let's put all those guys in a box right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Mia, who's only ever cheated that we know about on Lance once and is with Taye Diggs,
mm-hmm.
right? And all that did for her was make her feel okay with going back to Lance.
Yeah.
And so really, it was a good thing for their relationship in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jordan is like very controlling, but also upfront about that. She's also very honest and is, I would say, equal to or greater than Taye Diggs, even though they're so similar. They keep calling themselves peas in a pod.
Mm-hmm.
Her flaw is just that she has no moral conundrum with sleeping with Taye Diggs when he's dating somebody.
Right.
But that's, I would say that's more on Taye Diggs than her.
It's still a selfish thing on her.
And it's selfish for sure, but I think she's not the one actively hurting someone. She's just okay being a byproduct. I'm not saying it's morally good in any respect.
Yeah.
But like,
but if there's anything that's trope here,
mm-hmm.
I think this is the most tropey thing where there's some kind of infidelity at play. Everyone's a victim and everyone, well, no. Everyone's a victim.
What?
And well, they victimize themselves in a way. So I think I do believe
I'd say Jordan doesn't. Jordan isn't a victim of anything. I don't think
she got anything out of, well, especially since it was foiled.
If they did, yeah, since it was foiled, yeah, but her actions aren't victimizing herself.
Yeah, but if they did sleep together.
Sure.
You know, what is her end game? Is it just to have one night and then be done with him?
She's hoping she gets to change his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's
devious.
It's devious.
But it's also honest.
Sure.
I mean, in respect, if it is devious and honest, which is not too unlike Quentin, because Quentin, yeah, sometimes he's truth-telling, but sometimes he's just like stoking a fire.
Yeah.
And you're right. So this movie has a bunch of these complicated characters who are all put into a situation where if there was no book, it would be fine. But since there is a book,
it's kerosene,
yeah,
to everything, which, yeah, is it's
they're
really
all fire. And basically the book is just a can of gas.
Yeah. And I really respect the movie in this respect, that in other Hollywood rom-coms, you have a character who is the moral center and they resist temptation or they are tempted, but then they redeem themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, Love Actually is really a spectrum of characters who are good. Like, you have the worst characters being Alan Rickman. And then you have,
right, but even Alan Rickman
is still sympathetic.
He's still sympathetic in a way because we don't know that he actually does sleep with her. We just know that like he wants to and he's thinking about it.
Yeah.
So like they don't even go the full mile with him.
But it's enough.
It's enough to make him like the,
it's enough to hurt Emma Thompson.
Which is a sin that
you
none
don't
of us want
hurt
on our shoulders.
Emma Thompson.
No, not at all.
But as opposed to Colin Firth, which I know people,
his brother is the one who's the worst in this movie.
And people are like, oh, he's just taking advantage of this woman who works for him. It's like, I hear you, but
like at the same time, she's there for it in this movie's writing.
But in a movie like Love Actually, we wouldn't suspect Colin Firth of doing something.
Because he's Colin Firth.
Exactly. Yeah. This movie's not playing by those rules. It's a different rule book.
It is. And it's realistic in a respect. But I think this is about the time where I get to ask you whether you liked the movie or not.
I very much liked the movie.
Very good.
I was watching the first 10 minutes and was like, ooh, Kelly's going to have quibbles. Because it's the acting's kind of stiff and the editing's kind of stiff. And it's like still getting into the groove. And it's both you and Sarah have the same kind of thing where... Like, Sarah was watching, I remember distinctly, we were watching the first episode of The Mandalorian, and, like, the first scene was going, and Sarah was always like, something's off, feels kind of stiff. I'm like, give it a chance, like, let's just kind of wait it out, see how things go, and that's what this movie was for me, where it's like, the first 10 minutes, the acting's not totally up to par, but when we get to that card scene, then the movie, like, really... earned my respect. It's like, okay,
sure.
This is a
I thought
movie.
The card scene was a standout scene, yeah, for sure. I liked the movie. I'm not gonna say a lot because you're right, I did have quibbles, but I think I really like Taye Diggs. I don't really like him in this movie.
I don't think you're supposed to.
I'm not saying his character is like a little morally reprehensible at times.
Yeah,
that's not what I'm saying. I think he's miscast.
Okay.
I would have rather had somebody like Chidi from The Good Place play him, where he is actually more bookish, because I think the way that Taye Diggs is playing this character is so... Robin put it best. She was saying that he's not like a wood that has a slow burning ember in it, where it's like, okay, yes, he's more introverted and he has a lot of fire and a lot of wit underneath, but he keeps it tempered. It's more like he's a wet log. And that's kind of how I felt about him most of the movie, where I think Taye Diggs is a really good actor, but in this movie I feel like he's not playing his character fully.
No, I disagree. I think it would have been weird to see it be played by Chidi. Sorry, guy who plays Chidi. We love you.
I don't need Chidi, but I'm saying there's somebody better than Taye Diggs.
I think Taye Diggs' personality, his persona, I bought everything that developed, and I feel like throughout the movie I was really starting to see him as Quentin sees him, of like, look, you're cool, I'm your friend, but you're just as, you know, reprehensible as all of us. Like, you're judging everyone here. And like, I kind of saw the light that Quentin saw him in.
No, I saw that. No, I did see that too. I'm not saying he didn't accomplish it. I'm saying it could have been done better.
Yeah.
And that's fine if you liked it. That's great.
Yeah. I'm trying to think at like putting myself in the director's shoes. If I got that note from a producer of like, Taye Diggs needs to be better, I'd be like, I don't know what else to do.
Well, needs to be better is rough. But
I'll push back on you in the sense of what needs to be better. Like, give me a more specific note. What is there a scene where you're like, it should have played like this, then it would have been better?
For me, it was a lot of his reactions to things. I think he didn't make a strong choice into what his character needed or wanted. A lot of like, even like the moments I liked him most was when he was like worried about his book.
Yeah.
That was when we got as many emotions as out of him as we could.
Yeah.
But even when he was thinking like somebody was hot or something, or when he was like, you know, broken up about something, his emotional life that lived on his face was, it was there, but it, again, like wet log, it felt very wooden in a way that I feel like another actor might have brought a little bit more life to this character.
I think the thing we both agree on is the wedding scene where he proposes. Something really feels off about that, where we know that he's ready for something real.
That's story, though. Like, that's where it doesn't make sense story-wise.
But I think
his performance is fine.
I think we can at least meet there is saying, like, something's not coming together in the third act with his arc. Because we don't believe this proposal.
If he was more emotional in that moment, if he was giving me a little bit more desperation, a little bit more like, look, this is real. I need to convince you this is real. But he I really wasn't convinced by his performance that he actually felt that way, and not even contextually that he didn't feel that way and he was just trying to convince her that he felt that way. I didn't even get that.
Because he leapfrogs a development, because he goes from not even being able to say I love you on the phone to proposing to her. It's like, no, you just needed to have like a love confession to her, and that's when we would have been like,
that
yeah.
would have been much better, yeah. for sure.
We fixed it.
Wait, the only other thing I wanted out of this movie was so Quentin. Quentin, I think, is one of my favorite characters in this film. Can we rewrite the movie just a smidge?
You write your first draft with your heart. You rewrite with your head.
I think what you could have done with Quentin's character is he's a truth teller, right? He's trying to expose everybody, mm-hmm. and he's tired of being judged.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that. I think the way you... This is already a long movie. It's like an hour or 2 hours and 12 minutes or something. Yeah. But you could have taken it a step further. He is a character psychologically who is not only tired of being judged, but is wanting to succeed at something. He just doesn't know what that is. He keeps like learning bunches of things, and he's a jack of all trades, and he seems comfortable with that, right? Mm-hmm. I would have loved if he called everybody out and he was like, you know, you're doing this and you're doing this, you're doing this. Mm-hmm. He does that all movie, but the like maybe have Harrison or Harold...
Maybe have Harrison Ford come in for a scene.
Maybe have Harold like follow him out after he's called out everybody and be like, are you all right? And he's like, there's this one thing that I was really wanting. Like, it's something he's been working for years and he failed at it.
Mm.
And the humanity that we got from that is that the reason why he's being so poke the bear of everybody is because he's failed and he doesn't want everybody to know it.
Yeah.
And because he can't stand one more piece of judgment from them. And
yeah.
through confessing that, he can like get a reprieve from that judgment where they all realize through his vulnerability that they are way too harsh on their friend who's just trying to find his way in the world.
Yeah. A lot of his development comes indirectly, and I like that, but it was missing that some of that more like on upfront stuff.
Yeah. I will say, Robin and I talked about this after the movie. She didn't need it, and I think his character works without it because he's just kind of a funny guy. But if I was going to add something to this movie, I would add that.
That's what's good about these movies when it gets to this level where it's like, well, it's good and it's got flaws, but the flaws are different for each viewer. So that's where it kind of gets into a place where everyone should check it out.
Yeah, I would recommend this film.
Because you might have different mileage with it, and mm-hmm. some people might think it's flawless, other people might have a lot of problems with it, but instead of a movie like Valentine's Day where it's like, we all agree what the flaws are.
Yeah,
like, uh-huh. there's no two ways about it. This is just bad.
Well, Ryan, since this movie wasn't super bad, well, because that movie starts Jonah Hill and Michael Cera,
yeah,
it's
not
a different
movie.
Film. Would you give this one a rom-com Oscar?
Yes, I would. Can I give it best characters? I'm going to give it best characters.
Just best characters?
Yeah, just because...
Can you give it like most complicated characters?
Yeah, like something to the effect where I respect the movie having such... Like, the real thing is best well-drawn characters that have complicated emotions and feelings and are contradictory like most human beings are. That's my Oscar.
All
I don't
right,
know if
I
it'll
like
fit
that.
On it.
No, I like it. This movie was definitely about humans, and I liked that.
Really
it.
Well-drawn characters. And I also want to say, I don't know how to give an Oscar for this, but this is one of the most, and I mean this sincerely, one of the most Christian films that we have on our podcast so far, because what Lance goes through throughout this movie is the sinner's journey. He is facing the consequences of his own selfish deeds and his coming to need to forgive himself and to ask for forgiveness for the things that he's done wrong and to forgive others. And he does it through his faith. And I really respect this movie for being so outrageously R-rated, and it makes stupid Kirk Cameron movies look so dumb because this movie is so real about humanity, whereas those Kirk Cameron movies is so cookie cutter, candy coated about human behavior that none of it's believable, and this is 100,000% believable.
Okay. I'm going to push back a little bit on that, because I agree with half of what you're saying, but this isn't... What Kirk Cameron is doing is a faith movie.
Mm-hmm.
This movie just has a character who has faith in something.
Yeah.
You can have that all over the place in a bunch of films. That doesn't make it a Christian film.
As a Christian, I responded to this movie the way that those Kirk Cameron movies are wanting me to respond.
Cool.
Well, what's your Oscar?
I really don't know. Because definitely not best music.
No.
I don't want to give it something like best muscles. That seems trite.
It had a lot of good muscles.
We had a fight scene in Bridget Jones's Diary.
I like this fight scene 100% more.
Yeah, I think I do too. I mean, it's a more realistic fight scene. I think I had more fun in the other one, but this one felt, I felt very scared when it was happening. And you don't often find that. Like, you sometimes get it in something like a Brokeback Mountain that we've seen before. But I really think I'm going to give this best fight.
Best fight.
Yeah, it was a good fight. Yeah, it was just really good. But hopefully you won't fight with this next person. Who would you fall in love with?
Are there any circumstances in which the two of you might be more than just good friends?
The truth of it is, I loved you from the first second I met you.
But mostly I hate the way I don't hate you. Not even close. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
You have bewitched me, body and soul, and I love, and love, and love you.
I know.
It's so hard because they're all such complicated people.
It's true.
It's gonna be you're gonna get a lot of good with a lot of bad. So how do you pick?
Can I ask who, if you out of Robin or Jordan, who do you think the Taye Diggs should have gotten with?
I was hoping that he ended up with Jordan and took the opportunity to realize that he really didn't care about Robin. Because we don't really get how crazy he is about her. And it's just kind of like, it's almost out of convenience.
He's making a like a quote unquote responsible choice.
Yeah.
And I really think he didn't face the music of like his truth. He was like afraid that, oh yeah, I like this person who they keep saying that she's a career woman, and mm-hmm. there's mention made of the fact that like Taye Diggs, you know, is intimidated by that, even though like at one point in time he defends Mia as, you know, maybe Mia wants to have a life or something, but he seems intimidated by Jordan for some reason. I don't know why. They seem so perfect for each other.
Yeah, and it would have been weird if he tanked his relationship with Robin by sleeping with Jordan and cheating on her, so I'm glad they didn't go that route. I would have understood it if it was Harold Perrineau who just slept with Candy and just had, like, a drunken night with her, because that would make sense, because it would be
because his relationship is horrible.
It would be this desperate act, and that's the only thing he could possibly wield to get out of it, and has no power otherwise to do it. But they went a different direction, like, and I like that. So actually, I love him, so I'm going with Harold Perrineau.
Okay, very good. I love that. He's pretty good in this movie. I think I'm going with Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Because she, as morally reprehensible as she is, she's super foxy, and I like how openly honest she is with what she wants. Like, it's super attractive, even if maybe I wouldn't fall in love with her for a long time. Maybe we'd hit it off.
But
I don't
know. A sexy thing to just be super upfront and super transparent.
Yeah, because I like your choice, but I think I'm going with Jordan.
Yeah. I like it. It's a good choice.
Robin, I love you too. This is why I'm not going with the other Robin, because I like you most out of all the Robins.
The real Robin in real life.
Well, I think we have some letters. Ryan? I think we got some letters.
Maybe some letters.
Hey, Flo.
Huh?
Mail come. Got mail for you.
Oh, Pete, you've got mail.
You sent me a letter.
You've got mail.
The first letter was from Bert Branson, who
Bert
worked with me on Stranger Things. Bert said, "Dear sirs, just listened to your Moulin Rouge podcast, and it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it and can't wait to listen to your other ones. Thanks for turning me on to it. Sincerely, Bert Branson."
Hey, thanks, Bert.
Hey, thanks, Bert. That's super nice.
That's weird.
And we have a longer one by Darcy Juarez. She wrote to us about us missing a crucial puzzle piece from A Knight's Tale.
Ooh.
She thinks that we didn't talk enough about the courtly love of that film.
Yes.
She thinks that basically we should have talked a little bit more about
To my coy mistress. That's what the word I was thinking of last week. To my coy mistress. It's a poem. It's a Petrarchan poem. Thank you,
Who's
Darcy. I don't know, but it's about courtly love.
Hold on. I'm going to have you guess after I look it up.
Sir Walter Scott.
Think about certain movies that you really don't like, that you can't watch anymore.
Michael Bay.
No, that you can't watch anymore.
Baz Luhrmann.
No, they're movies that you refuse to get back into.
Billy Madison.
They're popular films and TV shows right now.
The MCU, Marvel, Kevin Feige,
Andrew Marvel,
to my coy mistress. Coy, the word I was looking for last week was coy.
And anyway, so basically, she was saying that what Heath Ledger is going through in the film is he is trying to pursue her, and she's trying to put him through the paces of, in order to woo me, you have to go through the steps of courtly love, which I like that he didn't have to, and he went through it his own way.
He still went through it.
No, he proved himself to her.
Yeah.
In a way, but he didn't go through it in the courtly manner. He went through it in basically
on the
most
field.
Yeah. In the most brash, low class way of getting punished.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like that. Thanks for writing in, Darcy.
Good point, and thank you for reminding me of the word coy.
Well, next week, what are we watching?
Ooh, good cue. Good cue. I'm trying to figure out who the actor plays Q on.
James Bond?
I don't know. No, Star Trek.
Oh, John DeLancey.
All right, give me a number between 1 and 177.
Four.
Ooh.
For the four best men in this movie.
Yes! I've been waiting so long for this. It's Blast from the Past.
Hey!
Another.
What were you calling them? High profile rom-coms? No. 90s?
High concept.
High concept rom-coms. Yes. I'm very excited. I haven't seen this since probably TNT in high school.
Yes. So next week is Blast from the Past. Some things to think about during your week. Please check us out on Instagram, on Facebook at
romcomgents.
Write us at romcomgents@gmail.com. Check out our Patreon where you can read about Kelly's James Bond essay, but you can also vote in our poll. Let's see if there's the dial has moved on our poll. So this month's movie poll, we've got 5-year engagement, Palm Springs. It could happen to you when forgetting Sarah Marshall, and Palm Springs is winning.
Still winning.
So if you want to change that, you have 1 week left to vote and let us know. After that, we will pick that movie. And then there'll be a new poll next month, so check that out. And also, if you could be a deer and write us a review on Apple Podcasts.
We would love it.
That would be really nice. And it would be so cool if you could leave us like a little 5-starter thing.
Yeah, as soon as we're done talking here, just go right back into Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you have and leave us a review. Even if you don't have Apple Podcasts, that's the one everybody cares about.
I know
it's kind of dumb, but
I wrote into another podcast to like say my thoughts, and they got me good. They're like, hey, those were really good ideas. We'll read it on the show. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, you know, rate our show on Apple Podcasts. It's been a while. And I'm like, well, since you're reading my thoughts.
Yeah, so don't be like Ryan was. Just do it. Just write it there in the first place.
But the thing is, like, we've read reviews when they come up. So if
yeah,
you
yeah.
want to, I mean,
we'll
it's a way
reviews.
Of getting on the show.
Yeah. So come hit us up. And Ryan, even though you slept with Mia, I love you.
Oh, Mia, Mama, I love you too.
And this is where we will say a goodbye.
Ryan and Kelly must bid you adieu. Thank you for listening to our review. Rate and subscribe, we'll even take a bribe. See you next week on the J. Gentleman's Guide to Rom-Coms.